So I'm sitting here with Michelle of Align Rehabilitation, and she is really growing and has something coming up on May 3rd.
On May 3rd, Align Rehabilitation will be having our grand opening of our brand new physical therapy facility. We are directly next door to Real Life Prosthetics, who has also expanded their lab as they build out their prostheses. So May 3rd is grand opening. I invite everyone to come tour both my brand new facility for physical therapy treatment, as well as see what Real Life Prosthetics has done with their new lab.
And what time is it?
It's 11 to 2, and then the ribbon cutting is at 11:15.
And so what's the address?
The address is 3435 Box Hill Corporate Center Drive, Suite C, Abingdon, Maryland, 21009.
There are a lot of great podcasts out there. And one of the things that I've been doing is recommending a podcast at the end of each episode. So make sure you stay tuned to the very end, because I guarantee you the podcast I recommend, you're going to love. We've heard it throughout the years that laughter is the best medicine. And believe it or not, laughter actually is probably the best medicine for recovery as well. You just do a Google search for recovery comedians. It's amazing how many different comedians that are in recovery are out there performing and performing at recovery events. Well, on this episode, I have a young gentleman from the Harford County Health Department, and you are going to be rolling when you hear his story. It's sad, but he brings laughter with it. Enjoy the conversation.
Coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios, Harford County Living presents Conversations with Rich Bennett.
Come on,
you're faster than me.
Guys.
We've been together.
Oh man, you already said it. I was going to ask her if she remembered the date.
With this being September, of course, a lot of the episodes that we're doing, we're focusing on National Recovery Month. And today I have Joe Kaczynski, not Joe Kaczynski.
Kaczynski.
Wasn't he a murderer or something?
Joseph, yeah, well, Ted Kaczynski.
Ted Kaczynski.
Ted Kaczynski was a murderer. He was the Unabomber. Yeah, he mailed people.
Yeah, we're not here at the Unabomber. My God, yes, I forgot. We're not here at the Unabomber.
I have Joe Kaczynski. I have been as unkempt as him in my life, if that makes any sense. Like, we shower at about the same rate.
Rania, are you going to be okay?
I'm done.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely not editing that part out now. People are gonna know that you actually do laugh at things.
Right.
So Joe is that. Joe, don't worry, Joe does. He's not a Unabomber. He doesn't blow anything up.
That we know of.
But Joe is, you're actually in recovery.
Yes.
How long have you actually been in recovery now?
So I got clean, my sobriety date or clean date is July the 10th, 2006.
So you just celebrated
not long ago. Yeah, 16 years, not long ago.
Congratulations.
No, thank you. It was a lot of work, but not entirely of my doing. There's been countless number of people that have, you know, helped along the way. So,
well, I was going to say, before we get into what you actually do here at the health department, you want to hit on that a little bit?
Okay, what?
About your recovery? You know, well, before you started recovery, and then what brought you into it?
I'll go a little bit. So I was a straight A student. Mm-hmm. By the time I graduated,
Hey Sarah, I'm sorry.
Hey.
We actually just started the podcast, so then it just started ringing while you're on.
We thought it was a bomb.
I know. Ted Kaczynski was back.
I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. All right, well, make sure you're just on mute now.
Hey, Angie.
It's okay.
Does that got a thing in it? Oh, she ain't going to talk.
No,
so
we're good.
I could put her in so she could.
No, we're good. We're
but
good.
I ain't worried about it.
You remember
oh, you're late.
I know.
We have Ted Kaczynski here.
Ted Kaczynski.
Hi, how are you? I'm
is Ted
like,
Kaczynski still
well, there? I have no it's idea. It's
not Ted Kaczynski. This is Joe Kazani.
Hi, how are you?
He's there not you a unibomber. Okay.
I don't even know who Ted Kaczynski is.
It's okay. That's a good thing. A good
yeah.
Thing. We'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, Ryan. This is why.
I told you. Sorry. Okay, we're good.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Joe Ted.
I'll just give you a quick background of what was going on. By the time I graduate high school, I'm a daily drinker, right? I come from a family with mother, father, sister, brother, white picket fence. We had one,
right?
Like the two dogs, go running along. And I was just always this like high anxiety kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just afraid of everything. I'm pretty sure I was just like in the womb dreading birth, right? Like this is gonna hurt, right? Like. I'm not going to know anybody, right? Like, this is going to be awful. Like, but that's the way I approach everything. And that's not the reason that I became, like, kind of an alcoholic and a drug addict, right? Like, the reason that I became that is that somewhere along the line I lost the power of choice in the drink and the drug, right? Like, I couldn't decide whether or not I picked it up or I put it down, right? Like,
right.
It was...
It was controlling you.
It was complete. I was under complete control, right? Like, and so by the time I graduate high school, I am a straight A student, but I am a, I'm a daily drinker and a daily drug user.
Well, if you don't mind me, what grade were you in when you started?
Well, I was 13 years old when
I
started. Wow. Yeah, I took my first drink at 13, smoked weed shortly thereafter. And I loved it. And this isn't everyone's experience that comes into it, right?
Yeah.
Like, but for me, it was like a light switch went off, and it was like, "Oh, this is my calling," right? Like,
and I
this
guess
is,
especially with high anxiety too.
Yeah, and that's it, right? Like, I have this thing where, like, my brain, and this is today. Like, this is not something that has gone away. Like, I'm a couple of years ago, I'm like 12, 13 years sober at this point in time, right? And like, I pull into a Wawa, right? And there were Boy Scouts outside, and they were selling popcorn.
That sounds good.
I just left. I just didn't want to do, like, the two-second no thank you thing. Like,
right.
I just didn't feel it. And so I just leave, right? Because, and that's, like, that anxiety thing that kind of, like, creeps up in me from time to time, right? Like, it just kind of leaves. And... But by the time I kind of go off. I got a full scholarship to a school.
Really?
I got a full scholarship to William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Wow.
They send me off, and I'm afraid. And within like 3 hours, I wasn't afraid anymore. Right? Like within 3 hours, I found like the four other dudes that were there, to drink and drug like
to
I
party,
like,
yeah.
to party and. And I felt good, right? And I joined a fraternity, and it was Animal House, and I was Bluto, right? Like, I was just like a...
God.
I was just like this big party. I wore Hawaiian shirts a lot and would, like, go crashing through tables. That's, like, how I would introduce, like...
Wow.
Staying up, like, 72 hours at a time,
What?
So, well, I'm allowed to say cocaine, right? That's okay. It was just like an alcohol fueled cocaine party. I got introduced to cocaine when in my freshman year in college, and I just kind of pursued that as much as I could. And
wow.
What I found was, while I was there, was that it talks about it in some literature and things of that nature, is that I knew pretty early on that once I started, I didn't know where I was going to end up, right? Like,
yeah.
I figured that part out. My mother took me to my first AA meeting when I was, like, 17.
Wow.
And she's, like, sitting out in the park. You go in. I don't wanna, Ma. Right? But, I go in and... But I knew that I shouldn't probably be drinking, right? Like, right. I would have this important thing that I, like, would you know, have to do. I would have a test the next day, or I would have to go meet with an advisor or something. You know, like, I would have this important engagement that must be kept, right? And I would tighten up at the exact wrong time, right? Like, I would, and, like, my brain, and I would say, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink tonight. Because if I drink, then I'll do drugs. And if I do drugs, then I don't know where I'm going to end up in 3 days. And I'll come out of a blackout and things will go bad.
Wow.
And then subtly, and it didn't feel like it was a cunning, baffling, powerful disease. It didn't feel like, you know, there was this thing working on me. It just felt like I changed my mind. Right? It just felt like I changed my mind. It was kind of subtle. And my brain would take a right turn. And I'd pick it up. It was this compulsion to pick it up, right? Like, there was this compulsion to pick up whatever was there, whatever was available.
Right.
And that runs the gamut. And, you know, I use terms pretty interchangeably with the drink, the drug, whatever. But if you can think of the substance, you know, I did it. And,
wow.
So... long story short, I get kicked out of school. Like, my last semester in college there, the scholarship had been gone.
In your freshman year, or?
This would have been the beginning of my sophomore year. My last semester there, I was registered for 5 classes, and I went to 4 individual classes, right? Like, I attended 4 like individual, meaning one I didn't go to at all, if the math works out there. And so they kicked me out. I was already on academic probation, and I kind of go home, tail between my legs, and I say to my mother, right, I say, don't worry, Ma, I've got this. You know, like, I know I'm not supposed to. I knew. I was like, I shouldn't be drinking. Right. I shouldn't be drinking. I shouldn't be doing drugs. You know, don't worry. It's going to be all right. And I'll stop. And then, you know, I'll get back into community college. We'll go back to school. It'll be fine. And so, like, the next 5 years or so of my life are a blur. And, like, I couldn't, you know, and it includes, you know, it includes jail.
Wow.
And I hate jail.
I hope everybody hates
jail, right? I feel like I'm just particularly bad at it. like, I feel like they go out of their way to make it uncomfortable. But, you know, it includes jail, it includes inpatient treatments, it includes outpatient treatments, it includes, you know, psych wards. I concludes a couple suicide attempts, you know, and so, you know, and I had been to rehab after rehab after rehab after rehab, and I had gotten out, and I'm living in a basement, you know, and I did some stints in my car, and, you know, I was homeless, and I'm living in the basement of this guy's house. I'm doing drugs with him that his wife doesn't know about. I'm doing drugs with his wife that he doesn't know about.
What? Wow.
I'm doing both of their drugs. Neither one of them knew about it. Because I was stealing. And and what would happen is that I would feel awful. Like, I would just feel awful.
Right.
Like, I would feel terrible. And the drink and the drug always did the thing that kind of allowed me to exhale, if that makes any sense. Like, it would be like, these things are running in my head. I would feel terrible. And then, the first few would always go, and I have, like, this emptiness that sits at me, and it would fill it up, right? Like, that sits in the middle of me, right?
Yeah.
Sits in my core. Like, and I could feel it. It's physical. And I would, you know, fill it up. And then it would drain out, and I'd be sober again, and it'd be bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And this spot in the middle of me is just getting bigger and bigger. And I swear, it was a day like nothing happened. And there was plenty of things that happened in my life. Like, I have totaled, like, 5 cars, right? Like, I have been arrested multiple times. Not in 16 years, but, you know, what? I haven't. I have had disaster after disaster after disaster happen. And I woke up one morning, and I had recently been to rehab again, but I was out again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just couldn't do it that morning. Right? Like, it was so weird. Nothing happened. It was like, I had some charges still out.
Right.
I actually had to do a little bit of jail time sober. But, like, nothing happened. I just woke up and I, like, was just crying and crying and crying. And, like, you know, like, the this big time cry and snot coming out. And so I did, and I was lucky enough to have, like, these resources, right? Like, yeah. And I was lucky enough to have some people. And so I do what I do when I get, in trouble. I call my mommy, and because I'm tough. And, you know, I said, "What do you want me to do, Ma? Like, I'll do what you want me to do." And, the next thing I know, I'm in the car and we're going to a detox in Bowling Green, Pennsylvania. And then following that detox, I went straight to a halfway house in Bel Air, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you, this wasn't the plan to be still sitting in Bel Air, Maryland 16 years later. But here I am. I thought that I was going to get out and be okay. And, and I just kind of caught hold of this thing. And, I kind of fell into a 12-step fellowship.
Right.
And that's not everyone's path, right? Everyone's this is just different. Mine, right? Like, yeah. this is, but I fell into a 12-step fellowship, and I didn't know it was going to happen, right? But the miracles of my life that have sprung forth from that, absolutely wild.
You know, something you said in a jokingly manner, you said you called your mom because, you know, you're a tough guy, and that's what right. people do is call their mommy. That was being tough, because that had to probably be one of the hardest calls you ever made.
Well, she had, my mom, God, and say what you want to about enabling or whatever. Mm-hmm. The poor woman just loved me so much.
Right.
I'm the oldest, but I'm also kind of the baby, if that makes any sense.
Because
I'm the one that needs the most. I'm the problem child, and. It was a tough call. It was a tough call. I was at the end of my rope, and I after kind of pushing her away, and I was downright nasty to my family, right? Like, there would be times, and it wasn't that I didn't love them or I was, like, a particularly evil person or anything like that. It was just that I was so consumed with this, and I don't know. I can't stress enough how much when I'm in the grips of it and when a lot of people that I know and I like, I know the vast majority of my social circle is in recovery. Right.
Right.
And so they seem to corroborate this with me is that when I'm in the grips of it, I cannot see beyond my own face. I just cannot.
Yeah.
It's just the sickness that's like pervades me, and it winds up hurting everyone around me. And you know, they want me to get help, and they want me to do things, and they don't want to give me money that's not mine. And I can turn into, you know, downright nasty and say some horrible things. And so pushing them away, so having to go to them as my only resort, right? And lucky for me, I had that. I had that resource, right?
Yeah.
Like, I had parents that, you know, sent me to rehab multiple times. I had, you know, kind of resources, and not everyone does.
Right.
And, but I used what I was able to get and to get some help. And I just wanted bad stuff to start stop happening. I just wanted bad stuff to stop happening. And I didn't know that I was going to get all this good stuff to start happening. And I can, you know, like, I just got back from my brother's wedding. My brother, who had, like, written me off, right?
Right.
And 16 years ago, he had written me off. And I just got back, and I officiated his wedding. And
really?
Then, yeah. He said, and, you know, he said to me, I think you would do a good job, and I think you would take it seriously. And I'm not a person who has ever taken anything seriously. And so it turned into this, like, you know, and that's just one example, like, of things, how things have gotten, you know, immensely good for me.
Yeah.
Not only just stopping the drink and the drug, right? Like, not only just getting clean, but, like, there's been a shift. I was able to pursue recovery, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, no, it makes perfect sense.
And, you know, I was able to pursue something positive. So... That's brief. I know you said briefly, but
hey, with this, there's no time limit. Seriously, there's not. So
but you know, there's, you know, but it was, it's been a good life, and I didn't think I'd still be in Bel Air, Maryland, 16 years later. It was not my plan.
And what is it you're actually doing now?
So I,
besides officiating weddings,
I'm trying to get that as a side gig. It would be,
hey, I wonder if there's anybody in this room that's going to be getting married anytime soon.
I'm available.
We'll do it together.
I know.
You can become a priest in the Catholic Church, and that's totally fine.
I can't. I was raised Catholic. I can't.
You ever thought about doing stand-up comedy?
Do stand-up comedy occasionally.
Get out of here.
Yeah,
are you serious?
That's a thing I do. I did it much when I was younger and I was drinking, right? Like, okay. I did it a lot. Recently, I have gotten back into going back in and doing it.
And now that you're sober and you know what you're saying, you're probably funnier.
I'm not sure. Sometimes... I'm not sure. I had to knock the rust off a little bit. There's more fear involved now. Like, I have to shake it out. But once
something
I kind of get
something you
can
always add to your skit is, I promise you, I am not Ted Kaczynski.
You're right. you can make humor out of anything, even the Unabomber, right?
You have to. You got to laugh at things. Laughter's the best medicine.
And that's the thing is, and that kind of ties in, is that all my friends and I think that everyone has their own thing. I don't think that this is unique to addicts, alcoholics, or anything. But there's such a levity that kind of comes with some of the darkest topics that, you know, it could possibly, you know, come up. And It's not because of poor taste. It's just out of familiarity with each other, right? Like it's we're familiar with some of those really, really dark feelings, and having that familiarity in a specific way that I think only that you know, I can relate to someone who has gone through addiction and alcoholism and whatever you want to call it,
right,
issues, like, very quickly, regardless of, you know, any sort of, you know, background. There's people that I would never, ever, ever imagine myself crossing paths with otherwise.
Yeah.
And yet there's, like, an instant connection because there's this recovery that's going on that we understand. There's this unique bond that we understand each other on a level that's kind of different. And so, like, I have, you know, really close friends, you know, in their 80s, and, you know, and you know,
it's a tight circle.
It is.
And I don't think a lot of people understand that. And I've talked about it in the past, like with the Marine Corps, people that have served, we're tight. But people are recovering. I've noticed this throughout the years. It's a very tight circle. And they're always helping each other out, which is something I love about it.
Yeah, and right, and people from all walks of life, right? And,
exactly.
And there's kind of a language that we speak that is different from, you know, normies or whatever we call, you know, people who, you know...
People that aren't in recovery,
who control and enjoy, you know, because I am it's not a temperance movement. It's not a shame filled thing. It's just not something where, you know, that it particularly bothers me if people drink, you drug, do whatever they want. I just know that I don't.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Yeah. Right? Like, it's a real miracle. Because every morning I would wake up and, like, that vulture would be on the bedpost, right? That vulture would be on the bedpost and said, you need to pursue this today, right? Like, you need to go and pursue whatever it is that I needed that day. And,
It's almost like some of those cartoons where you have the devil on this shoulder and the angel on this, you know, telling you good, telling you bad. Because, you know, when you're talking about going through everything, talking about, well, I knew I had to do this, but someone else was telling me to do this. And I need to get rid of that, more or less get rid of that pain. And it's that's what it reminded me of when you said that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I listen to the devil quite often.
Yes.
Right. There was a considerable period of my life where the devil was so much stronger than the angel, if that makes sense. And so that's what happened, right? Like, I started feeding the angel, right?
Right.
Like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, like, so that the angel could get a little stronger. And
left the devil down in that basement.
Yeah. Somewhat.
Yeah.
Some, for the most part. Sometimes he still pops up.
All right, so you do stand up, which means you're writing your stuff. Have you thought about writing a book?
Cause you're, no. That seems like a lot of work. Like,
Joe Ted, you do realize you could actually speak into your phone or whatever and record it now that you got programs out there where we'll put it into writing for you.
Maybe down the line. I am open to anything that there is.
I think it would be good. I think it'd be a good book.
I don't try to rule anything out specifically.
Right.
I just want to make sure that I get it right because I might misremember some things. I'd have to check with my family on the details. Don't want a James Fry situation. I'm sorry. I mean, are you familiar with the Million Little Pieces thing? Never mind. I'm sorry. There's a guy who wrote a famous addiction memoir, and it turned out to be like a bunch of fake stuff.
That was so long ago. The
reason I remember it so well is because, like, it was like there was a times I was bouncing in and out of rehab. It kind of became the book, and it was like, you should read A Million Little Pieces. And then it kind of began. Ha! That guy was lying.
But did it help people?
It did. It helped a lot of people.
Right.
So. I think it did help a lot of people. I think, I read it. I did read it a long time ago. But what it does capture the essence of what it's like.
Right.
Of what you feel, anyway. You know, but, and there's been plenty of memoirs that have done that. That you see.
Just make sure if you do write one, don't call it like A Million and One Pieces. Although, actually, that could be a selling title. A Million and One Pieces It's not the Ted Kaczynski story.
It's not the
Ted. Think about it, if it blows up. I mean, there's a lot of pieces.
Blows, if it blows up, if it blows up, there will be a million and one pieces.
So here at the health department, what is it that you actually do here at the health department?
That's a great question.
Rania, what do I do?
Right. I work for what's called the Local Addiction Authority. We're part of what's called the Local Behavioral Health Authority. And
which is part of the local health department.
Right. It's a complex title for something that is not... authority sounds so authoritative. And... but essentially we work as a intermediary between the Behavioral Health Administration, mm-hmm. and the Maryland Department of Health and you know, local providers.
Okay.
Oftentimes that has to do with grants and things of that nature, and they say the state agencies will release money to us, and at which point we subvend to the local providers who are working with you know, individuals directly.
Okay.
And so we make sure that the local providers are doing what they're supposed to be doing with the funds, and we also, you know, if the local providers have a problem with what Behavioral Health Administration is doing or what MDH is doing, we work on their behalf the other way, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
There's like a lot that too, like Harvard County is doing for like recovering them too, mm-hmm. like in partnership with the LAA. So like they're helping hand out purple lights to kind of bring awareness again, not because it's football season, but you know, shine light on recovery, like purple's the color. So,
although if businesses do want to display purple lights and they don't want to be associated with this, the Ravens do offer a convenient out, and so you could kind of support both. It really is a convenient color in this area, which is unfortunate. I'm a Commanders fan. And Commanders, I know they used to be a different name,
right?
And they used to be, yeah. So you know, you feel a little bit, you know, better about that. So morally, but I don't like the name. But yes, I'm unfortunately that. And thus that's why I picked up drinks and drugs, right? Because I had to deal with that team.
God.
Good thing you weren't an Eagles fan.
What?
It's me.
Eagles fan. You have a Super Bowl recently. I don't. I don't want to, like, I was 10 years old last time that team down in Washington won a Super Bowl, and I thought that's just what happened, is that every couple of years your team just gets to win the Super Bowl, and...
Seems like that way now. Yeah, who knows? I mean... I take it you're a Nationals fan too when it comes to baseball.
Yes, yes.
So what is it about the DC teams then?
Well, I grew up in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Virginia
doesn't have teams. They, I grew up about like 40 minutes out of DC. So
like big college.
Yeah, but there isn't an NFL team or Major League Baseball team in Virginia.
No.
As big as the state that is, what's up with that?
The most major city is Richmond, and what are you going to do? You know, so I grew up in what's essentially a suburb of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
A little bit south of most suburbs of Washington, D.C., but, you know, but everyone there is fantastic.
So is that where you went to school at down there?
So I went to high school in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I went to college in Williamsburg, Virginia. And I flunked out of that college, but I did a tour of Virginia colleges. I've been to a lot of them, you know, because as I'm bouncing in and out, I keep trying the school thing,
right?
And I keep failing at that. I couldn't manage it. Like, there's some people that's the thing. It's just like the experiences are like many and varied. There are people that were like extremely high functioning, right? And they were, kind of in the grips mm-hmm. of this thing, and they were still able to like make it every day and do the things and it still took a toll on them, right? Like it was yeah. not like that they were, you know, necessarily having an easier time than I was. It was just that it kind of manifested itself differently than it did in me, which was to just totally withdraw from anything that could be positive or productive in my life. And I was kind of unable to control things while I was under the influence of things. Like, I just was unable to maintain anything that resembled something looking good on the outside.
Right.
And, but there are people that struggle with this, you know, incredibly. And they are up at 5 a.m. and they're at work and they're doing their thing and they're clocking a gajillion dollars a year and they're, you know, this high functioning person and they're suffering uh-huh. from this as well. And so it's, you know, from, you know, and to quote a book that is very popular in the recovery community, right? Very popular in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that they just said that we vary, like, we were on a ship together, and from steerage to captain's table. You know, that's another boat reference, I'm sorry, right? Like that we were from all walks of life, and you know, this thing kind of pervades us.
Addiction is not racist. It knows no age. It knows no gender. It doesn't care who you are.
In my experience, I have met, and gratefully so, right? Like wonderfully so. Like, I think that kind of being exposed to this has given me an appreciation for people that are so unlike me that we have this common bond, right? Mm-hmm. And people that are so different from where I am, and I've learned so much from that. And I think I've had, you know, experiences with people that I would have normally not mixed with, and you know, and learned so much about people and about, I know this sounds weird, but about like the human condition,
yeah. right?
And like through recovering, and I'm kind of eternally grateful to those people. I'm eternally grateful to all the people that supported me,
yeah.
and literally, there. I probably, you know, just in my story alone, right? There's thousands of those people, right? And like thousands of people that, no matter how small, have like really helped me along the way,
right?
You know, and you know, kind of gotten me in touch with resources, you know, and I think in Harford County there are resources where people can get help, right?
Actually, what brought you to Harford County?
It's kind of a roundabout story.
Okay.
So I went to a rehab in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there, and I had recently had to go there because I was in an IOP before that.
A what?
An intensive outpatient program.
I knew that.
Intensive outpatient program where I was staying. And I was kind of gaming the system. You know, I was able to, and I think I was there for some sort of probation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little fuzzy to me, to be honest with you. I don't exactly, but I was probably at this intensive outpatient for, you know, kind of gaming the system, for some sort of probation, right? And so I was supposed to go. But I was, you know, like, I was faking drug tests, and I was, able to kind of manipulate the system for a while, and it caught up to me, and I got a DUI, which was not my first,
right,
and, so they sent me to rehab, and I had been to this rehab before in Williamsburg, Virginia, and they were like, we want you to go to a halfway house. And so they contacted this IOP, and this fellow that I was in IOP with had recently gone to this halfway house in Bel Air, Maryland.
Okay.
And so they kind of worked together and said, hey, okay, we're going to send you to this halfway house in Bel Air, Maryland. And I kind of reluctantly agreed to it. I didn't particularly want to go, but they made a mistake. they sent my brother to pick me up, to bring me from the rehab to the halfway house. Now, my brother is the sweetest kid in the world, like just a wonderful person.
Right.
But if there's anyone I can manipulate on the face, it's my baby brother.
Wow. Right?
And you know, so I was like, hey, Dan, you know, I think this 28-day thing worked out real well. Why don't you just take... And so he brought me back to my mother's house.
Wow.
So I convinced him to. But my mother, to her credit, for the first time, you know, and this was her taking care of herself at that point in time, mm-hmm. right? Like, she had to take care of herself at that point in time. And I said, hey, Ma, let's just stay. And she said, I don't know where you're going to go. Like, I don't know where you, but you're not staying here. And that was the first time my mom had said that.
Wow.
Right? And so that's when I wound up in the basement with that.
Right.
And so I went on that. I went on a run for a few more months after that in that basement. And that kind of brought me to that point where I called, and they had already been in touch with this halfway house. And so they sent me to a quick detox. And which was, like, I didn't go through another 28-day program. This is just my experience, right?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't say that this is necessarily, and everyone's experience is going to look a little bit different, right?
Right.
Everyone's experience is going to be, and some people are going to wind up in halfway houses. Some people are just going to walk in and get, you know, do an abstinence base. Some people are going to, you know, seek medication.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to, be able to, you know, that may still drink, but cut out, you know, something that was really bringing them to their knees. For me, I just happened to kind of fall into this abstinence-based recovery.
Okay.
And that was... what happened for me, you know, and it just kind of took hold, and it started to become good. And once I started to see that it became good, I started wanting more. And as I, you know, started wanting more, I started to really pursue it, and it kind of came of a passion of mine, right?
Right.
It became something that not only was I having this experience, right? Then I started wanting to have other people have it, right? Like, it was just a natural thing that built up. And I'm a selfish guy, right? Like, I mean, like, I wake up in the morning still, and I think, me, right? So to have this thing where I really want to bring this to other people is something new for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that people who've experienced that kind of recovery find in their lives. I think that that's something where motivations sometimes shift,
mm-hmm.
and you really want to just bring something to someone else. So it was it's been a wild ride, man.
So with college, because you said you left your sophomore year.
Yeah.
What were you going to college to major in?
I would have told you I was going to be a lawyer. That, like, I would have told you that then, but I just wanted to do anything that sounded good, right? Like, everyone was just telling, I didn't know, right?
Right.
I just wanted to have fun. I was a party guy, and, and I was having fun, and I was a party guy, and it was fun. Like,
right.
I don't want to say that it wasn't, like, it was just bad for me. Like, I was having a blast. But, like, it was a thing where, You know, my parents were like, oh, he's got good SAT scores, and he's really going places, and he's got all the highest grades. And my high school graduation, they announced the top 10 kids in the class, right? Mm-hmm. And I have all the sashes and banners and cords and things hanging from me. And they announced my name. They announced the top 10 kids in the class. They said, hey, Joe Gazzotti. And so I stand up, and from the back, you just hear, I get high with that kid, right?
Wow.
And it was true. He did get high with that kid. you know, it was less than... And that's the thing is that I was able to keep that together during. I was using drugs throughout high school, right? I was using drugs the entire time, and I was able to hold it together then. And then somehow I struck out on my own, and everything fell apart. Yeah. So it's just, and there are people who it falls apart as soon as they put it in, and there are people who falls apart 30 years later, and there are people who it never quite falls apart on the outside, but it just destroys them on the inside.
Exactly. Wow. So this was at graduation when the kid yelled that out?
Yeah. It was at my high school graduation, and they were having me stand up because I was a good student.
Hey, were you able to look at your mother when he said that?
I mean, deep down, she already knew.
Right.
Right? Like, she knew pretty early on that there was something going on. Like, I used to think, you know, they let my brother and my sister would just like experiment with these things, and then they would go, and my mother wouldn't freak out. And my mother would always, she knew that there was something different about the way I drank and the way I did. She knew from the beginning. And so I don't think she was particularly shocked when she heard it, probably embarrassed. Yeah. But
wow. Holy cow. my mother or father probably would have came up and smacked me.
Yeah.
Well, number one, I wouldn't have been in the top 10 anyway. So. Maybe the bottom 10. I was not that good in school.
It's okay. People that usually end up not being the best in school end up being very successful, too.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
And sometimes those that do really well in high school have a harder time.
Do you have anything to add whatsoever?
No, I think, you know, I think if we're going to be talking about Recovery Month and something that I just want to emphasize that is something that the recovery is something that's out there for for anyone that wishes to pursue it, and that there are resources available. And I think Ronnie may be able to tell you more about that than I can. I think she's probably going to like list off some things because I didn't come prepared, because I never do. And
I come prepared for you.
I know. Thank you. I appreciate that. But that it's out there for you.
Yeah.
And that whatever that particular recovery looks like, if you find your lane, find where that, you know, what it is that you want to be doing and pursuing. And if you're unhappy with the way things are and exist, and you feel like you kind of got that sickness, that there are resources, that there is light out there, that there is a way up and a way out. I didn't think that I was ever, like, I mean, I was in some of the darkest places that I have, you know, I think that I could imagine, like, some of the darkest things emotionally, you know, emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually.
Right.
You know, run the gamut, and that there was a light there, and there was a light there, and like, great things have happened in my life as a result. Like, and you know, you hear, and there is like a life beyond your wildest dreams out there, right? Like, and I always end this, when I talk, I always say, you know, and you'll hear people say that there's this like life beyond your wildest dreams. And my dreams are wild, right?
Right.
My dreams are like money and women and boats and mansions and, you know, looks like a Jay-Z video. And I don't have any of that, right? But what I've been given is something so far beyond that, right? Like, what I have been given is the ability to kind of be able to be kind of here in front of you,
right,
be able to kind of look you in the eye at a time when I'm sober, where I'm clean and I'm sober. And I had been comfortable and I had been sober, but I had never been both at the same time. And I am that now.
And that's out there. And that is success.
And that, right, exactly. And that's something so far beyond what I ever thought was right. possible. And so that was beyond all those dreams that I had.
It's better than any boat, better than any mansion.
Yeah.
Any of that. And it doesn't cost you as much to run.
I know, right? So anyway, that's what I would leave with. But
Ron, do you... Oh, sorry. I know you had some information for us where people can call and everything.
Yeah, so we have, like here at the health department, we have community-based behavioral health treatment and support services. And you could find our information online at www.harfordcountyhealth.com. Or you can give us a call at 410-877-2341.
I want to thank Joe and Rania and the rest of the crew at the health department for coming on. And I hope you got something out of that, because you have to have laughter. You know, no matter what, laughter is still the best medicine. And you heard it from Joe himself. I didn't realize he was a comedian until we started that and I mentioned it. But anyway, for this episode, I want to recommend a podcast that I came across. It's called The Drunkalogs. It's hosted by Nick Morton, and he actually has different guests on, and they share their, I'll just read a description. They share their often hilarious stories of addiction and recovery, how it was, what happened, and how it is now. And it's followed up by a 30-minute interview with Nick, who is also a film producer, writer, and comedian. And I'll have a link to the show in the show notes, so make sure you check that out. Again, it's called The Drunkalogs. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, or if you would like to recommend somebody for me to get on the podcast, or if there's a topic you want me to talk about, just go to conversationswithrichbennett.com, click the Be a Guest link, and fill out the form, and I'll get in contact with you, and we'll get everything set up. And while you're there, please subscribe to the podcast, as well as the newsletter. And check out all my sponsors, and of course, my co-hosts. Please show your support for all of them as well. Until next time, my name is Rich Bennett. Stay safe, and thank you for joining the conversation.